Interview with Rodrigo Edmund, 28th of October, 1966.
You know, as I was saying, in your time, were you taken out on circuits?
No. Mm-hmm. Well, at a certain stage, mm-hmm. I went out with the office assistant sometimes, not with the government agent himself.
And who was the office assistant?
Ludington, mm-hmm. Dyson.
Did the office assistant take you out on their own initiative or because the GA asked them to?
No, on their own.
On their own.
It's a sort of personal relation between the younger men.
Mm-hmm. You see, it would appear that in the early years, the Ceylonese cadets were not taken out by the European GAs. Though later on, this changed.
Yes. You know, in the early years, there were not many Ceylonese cadets.
Yes.
It is the Ceylonese got into the civil service on any scale mm-hmm. only after the war.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, in fact, I was the only man, I think.
Kumaraswamy? V. Kumaraswamy?
Oh, yeah, they were the local division men.
Yeah.
You know, at that time, the civil service was divided into two parts. Those who were recruited in England were in what is called the regular civil service.
Oh,
then there was what is called a local division civil service, which was recruited up to a limited degree, so many places vacant. By a local examination here. I was thinking when I said this in the service mm-hmm. of men who were recruited in England. There were a few recruited here.
Mm-hmm.
Two Kumaraswamys, C.L. Vikramasinghe, Ernst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The point was, if you were not taken out on circuit by the GA,
yes.
the practical training you would receive would be more limited.
Yes, very much so.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering whether there was a question of social division here and a sort of perhaps even a color prejudice because they didn't take the Ceylonese cadets.
I never felt that there was what might be called color prejudice,
mm-hmm.
but I always felt that naturally,
mm-hmm.
like birds of the same species meeting together,
mm-hmm.
then the English British civil servant would naturally be attracted to the youngster, talk to him more freely.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. There was a certain distance between them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know that something on which there was feeling among the Ceylonese and Indians and the West Indians
mm-hmm.
was that later on, as they progressed up the civil service grades, they were kept in non-administrative posts for quite some time. Did you feel this?
There was no time for that sort of feeling because I myself joined in 1913.
Yes.
The war came the following year.
Mm-hmm.
Then conditions changed almost overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So that I didn't feel it.
Would it be correct to say that the cadets who came after the First World War were more liberal in their outlook than those who had come before?
Mm. I think that is true. With regard to racial relations and that sort of thing, they were more liberal.
Mm-hmm. Now, who were the GAs under whom you served in Kurunagala and in...
At the Kurunagala, there was Kindersley.
Mm-hmm.
Then in Colombo, there was Fraser.
Mm-hmm.
At Tatnapura, there was Constantine and Alexander.
Mm-hmm. Did any of these folk impress you in particular with regard to ability and...
Ability. I thought that Now I forget his name. The man in Colombo.
Fraser.
He was definitely more able than the others. Came to a decision very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And the decision was manly, as we do. This is my decision. And usually correct decision.
Mm-hmm.
They had different qualities. Now, Alexander
was
a thorough gentleman.
Yeah.
When you meet him and you smile, both he and his wife, it was a different world from these other men.
Mm-hmm.
Kindersley was an old world type who tried to patronize the local people.
Mm-hmm.
Constantine went on his work, finished it up, and get over.
Would you say that any of these British civil servants had a sense of mission, or was that unusual?
I think quite a number had,
mm-hmm.
but there were others who didn't have it.
Mm-hmm. Was there a feeling that they were paternal despots?
Yes. But the most acute and precise sense of legality and right.
Mm-hmm. Bound by the rules of...
It was different from today. Today one does not feel as if action will be taken by government because it is the right thing. At that time,
mm-hmm.
whether you agreed with them or not, what they did was the right thing according to their lights and according to the regulations.
Mm-hmm.
They never departed from that.
Was there a tendency of British rule? That is, when I say British rule, I say the period before 1931, before the Donna Moore Constitution. Was there a tendency to move in fixed grooves without real purpose and objective, without a sense of purpose?
There was a general sense of contentment,
mm-hmm.
No hankering after change.
Let sleeping dogs...
It didn't look like idleness.
Yes.
It is that nothing was needed.
Mm-hmm.
The population stood at a certain level, and according to the standard of living to which the people are accustomed, that population could be catered for with the income of the country. So that no one hustled, no one was in a hurry,
mm-hmm.
no one foresaw the possibility that after so many years of British settlement, the population would increase, leap up like this, and at the same time, contact with the outside world would raise their requirements, standard of living, and didn't worry.
Mm-hmm.
That came more or less as a sort of surprise.
Mm-hmm. Was there too much reliance on routine? Did routine dominate?
Routine,
precedence and routine, R-O-U.
Routine.
Mm.
Yes, I think so.
Too much?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think by the time that I came into the service, that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I gather earlier, there was much greater exercise of individuality
mm-hmm.
by the civil servants.
In fact, I have come across some evidence
yes.
that those who showed some sort of individuality
yes.
were generally a bit discouraged and they were laughed at, or people like Brain perhaps.
Yes. Yes. There was Brain was regarded as a bit of a joke by people, although
mm-hmm.
he was one of those men who was genuinely anxious to do what he thought was right. He was almost missionary in spirit.
Mm-hmm. What about Sands?
Sense.
Was he also regarded as a, like Brain?
No. Mm-hmm. Sands was good intention, mm-hmm. but weak, no force of character.
Mm-hmm. When you were in the field, especially as an AGA or later on as a director of agriculture, did you find it possible to establish a rapport with the peasantry? Were you able to understand their frame of mind with the peasant? You see, your background was an intellectual background. I was wondering how the translation was.
I am a special case. Mm-hmm. I come from that village. I was born in a village amongst that class of people. My relations were that class of people. I was educated in a village school.
Oh, I see. In St. John?
Yes. Before that, I went to my village school, Singhali school. Mm-hmm. Then at St. John's. Then I went to England. So that my contact with the people in my youth mm-hmm. was very close.
And so you were able to understand the...
Yes.
What about the British, average British officer?
No, they didn't understand the Singhalese character. Mm-hmm. Singhalese character is very difficult for them to understand. As you know, yourself possibly, there are peculiarities about character mm-hmm. which are very much, very un-English.
But didn't Wolf understand it to some extent in his book?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, he understood. And others also understood it to a certain extent. When they interested themselves in the people generally, many of them had special interest, especially a man like Fraser. Fraser was determined to develop the country almost like German methods. Mm-hmm. Yes. Build roads, introduce electricity, introduce showy buildings, mm-hmm. A central square with the roads radiating and that sort of thing. In all his actions, that is typical of his attitude of mind. Mm-hmm. Now, when you have a man like that, he is not very interested in the ordinary man beyond doing justice to him.
Yes. Would it be correct to say of the 1910s and 20s that the civil servants represented the needs of the peasantry?
What?
That the civil servants represented the needs of the peasantry better than the average politician of that day?
Did you say understand the needs?
No, well, perhaps...
They're interested in...
perhaps represent them.
Yes.
Well, understand and represent.
Yes. Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's very interesting because even the politicians were often of the lawyer class.
Yes.
And I was wondering how far they were in touch with the peasants.
Yes, they were not in touch with the peasants, most of them. And as I said earlier, there was a general feeling of contentment which did not provoke any sort of interest with a view to the betterment of the peasant class. Mm-hmm. But they are perfectly happy.
Mm-hmm. That's what the civil servant thought.
No.
That's the general feeling.
General feeling amongst our own people. Mm-hmm. The civil servant felt it his duty to progressively improve the condition of these people.
What sort of impact did a man like Dharmapala have in his day?
Yes. You see, we had reached a stage when nationalistic feeling became strong. Mm-hmm. You know the usual course of development when a race like the British invades a backward race. At first, these people who hadn't a regular meal to eat or anything like that, who didn't even have a money economy, finds that they are coming here, this is their standard living, they have no tradition, no feeling that they themselves are a race of people. They accept the situation, they are very happy. Then they get a certain degree of education, and even some of them go up to John Stuart Mill and, and that sort of thing, and they get ideas of free government and that sort of thing. And those who read that standard begin to feel, why should we be like this? Why should these fellows come and rule over us? A natural feeling, all the, everywhere. You know, I was in the British government, but all the time I felt, although I would not be disloyal to them, still, it would be very much better if they go away and leave us to stew in our own juice. That sort of feeling you have at a certain stage. Now, in Dharmapala's time, that stage was being reached, especially with regard to religion mostly.
But I was wondering how what his impact was. Did many people take note of what he did? For instance, in your village, before you went to England, was his name well known?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But not as an active figure influencing us, but a remote figure whose influence reached us through agents. Now, for instance, I remember still when I was a boy, before I went to the English school, a woman came along dressed in a sari. Saris had not yet come in. And had taught herself, had had religious instruction and that sort of good speech. And he was a representative, she was a representative of the group that Dharmapala created. And that is the sort of contact we had with Dharmapala.
But what was it? Was there a mass response to him?
No.
Was this woman a member of the Temperance Society? Was she a member of the Temperance Society?
No, Temperance Society hadn't come into existence at that time.
What sort of influence did the Temperance Society have? Was there a following?
Again, it was religion more than anything else.
But wasn't it, in a sense, the a nationalistic expression in a religious form? Something against, an expression against an alien culture?
No. It wasn't conceived in that spirit. It might have developed later on. You see, at a certain stage, by about 1910, the people who had had Western education in Ceylon has come to wanted somehow or other to show their resentment, to express their feelings in the government. And any particular thing that came before them at any time, whatever it was, good enough to be in the government.
In fact, that brings me on to these 1915 riots.
Yes.
And the way the government suppressed them, you see.
Yes.
And I noticed that you were in Colombo then.
Yes.
Did you have to go out on duty?
I went out once without being told by anybody. But the position was very unfortunate. The Fraser, who was the government agent there, was very strong and rabid almost in his belief that this is an upheaval against the British government when they were engaged in war.
Yes, how did he get that idea?
Because there was no reason for these things. It was most meaningless sort of thing.
Mm.
And I also was suspected. Not suspected, they had me on their guard against...
They were suspicious of the Sudanese civil servants?
Yes, anybody like that. I still remember when I said something on a minute, when I minuted something, which seemed to indicate a want of belief in this theory of civil rebellion, Fraser wrote a course in red ink, AGA, that's brain, red herring, and put a mark of exclamation. Mm-hmm. That is the attitude at that time, and I considered that a natural attitude. I never had any resentment.
But I feel, I know it may have been a surprise to them, but why, it's a strange form for a people to rise against the Moors if they were aiming at the British.
Yes. Caused trouble. You see, people's nerves at that time were highly strung.
Mm-hmm.
The European civil servant, they felt as if they were bleeding in Europe for their empire. At that time, here, somebody goes and pinches them from behind. It's not a sort of reasoned, calculated belief deduced from facts that this is rebellion against the British, but it is sort of disregarding the interests of Great Britain in time to their difficulty. They regarded it that.
Was there any shred of evidence in support of this?
No. It was not so. Nothing at all. I as a single man, I knew people.
Mm-hmm.
There was absolutely nothing at all. It is.
Mm-hmm. Because I have seen some, I don't believe in this, but I have seen some of these letters written by Stubbs and some of the AGAs and GAs in the provinces.
Yes.
And they put forward all sorts of grounds. You see, they said one reason was that the shops in Colombo had been marked Sinhala, the Sinhalese shops.
Yes.
Then the use of Vesak lanterns and in certain places they're supposed to have rung temple bells to get the crowd. You see, I'm not saying that they're correct, but these are things that they put forward.
Yes. As a matter of fact, those things did take place, but the European civil servants, they did not realize that those things are almost instantaneous, spontaneous. The fight takes place at Kandy, it gets known, the Chinglis and the Moors are fighting, immediately feeling guys against Moors, and overnight, the places are marked. And,
no, I don't believe it was against the British, but apart from that, was there some sort of premeditation against the Moors? Was this planned? No.
No, there was. I don't think there ever was any feeling. It was. I don't know whether you remember the Gordon riots are described by Dickens.
Yes.
It's something like that. No one knew how it began. No one knew how it spread.
But there must have been some sort of local incitement in each area, you see what I mean?
No.
To get the mob up?
No.
I mean, you must have a mob leader?
No, there wasn't. Without any sort of thing, well, now of course there has been feeling in the Tamils, but even then, that feeling, I could get up a riot, standing in Galway's green in a packing case and shouting, these damn Tamils, they came in. They take our bread out of our mouth and that sort of thing. Very easily, unbalanced people can be agitated into activities of that kind. And that is what happened.
Mm-hmm. Was there any industrial unrest behind it in Colombo? Didn't the railway workmen take a leading part in the looting?
No. They, no.
The locomotive workshops from at Maradana?
You see, there was a difference between the ordinary village man who was inactive and these people. These people were people who frequented Colombo, who knew their way about.
Mm-hmm.
And when this agitation took place, they were the people who took part.
Mm-hmm.
It is not that they were organized for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. They were sort of natural leaders.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And did you find that when, as OA Colombo,
yes?
As OA Colombo,
yes.
Fraser and others were reluctant to give you responsibility in handling the riots?
Yes.
You felt that was so?
Yes.
And what were Brain's and Waits and their views on the riots, the other AGs, what did they say? Brain and the other Burden and all the other European officers who were in the archery, what was their view about the riots? Did they agree with Fraser?
Did they agree with?
Fraser.
It was the last number, did.
Were there any who disagreed? In your recollection?
Not that I contacted.
But did you get the impression that government and the military were very, very confused and rather panic-stricken?
Oh, yes, there's no question about that. That was the situation there. As I said, it is not reasoned out. Here we are in difficulties, these fellows are.
Did you meet Stubbs at all? The colonial secretary?
Not during that time.
There seems to be some evidence to show that military governor, I mean the Brigadier General Malcolm, was a bit eccentric.
This is the first time that I heard that. With regard to the activities of the British government in relation to the riots, I might tell you at once that I am entirely with them. I think a civil commotion of that magnitude and of that nature should not be just repressed by preaching and by persecuting of people. Little bit of terrorism is necessary. Again, just as in the case of the Gordon riots. I feel that in the more recent riots, the Tamils were attacked, the way that they dealt with it was wholly inadequate, because when it was over, the people were left with a sort of feeling that after all, it's not bad to beat up the Tamils. Now, it is very bad when there has been such an upheaval to leave that impression.
This was a serious nature, was it?
What?
The civil 1915?
Oh yes, it was very general. When you go along in the train, along Slave Island, you see crowds of men, perfectly meaningless, with no feeling at all, no resentment, chasing three women along there, because they were Muslim women. Women who never got out without covering themselves. And you begin to boil. You get angry. I had that feeling, and I think most people did. And they rioted themselves. They were no better. They were not wicked. They were really impulse at the moment.
But don't you think that the terrorism went too far? Didn't they deliberately try to cow the Sinhalese afterwards?
No. They tried to make the people feel that this sort of thing can't be tolerated.
But what about this exaction of money for compensation, the way they did it?
The eventual recovery by law, I thought was perfectly justifiable. Perfectly justifiable. What might be questioned is the action in those cases in which they got hold of a man of some wealth and influence and then released him on it paying.
That's virtually blackmail.
50,000 rupees or something. Yes.
There were some cases like
that. There were such cases. At that time, they thought that these people were behind this riot and that they must be punished.
In fact, weren't the diocese of Mathura suspect? The Dias family in Mathura,
yes.
In Panagura?
Yes.
Weren't they suspected of being leading?
Yes. All those people who led this Buddhist movement were suspected because the riot began as a feeling, as only the manifestation of feeling between Buddhist position and a Muslim mosque.
But then also, apart from the acts of terrorism, there was some unwanted shooting in Kegala and other areas, weren't there? And even perhaps in Colombo.
I didn't feel it. I felt that shooting even was missed. Now, I'm one of
you. You were for the, having you were for court martial for martial law.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. But should they have had martial law for 3 months? For 3 months.
Yes.
Should they have kept it for so long?
No, it was not necessary. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, as a safeguarding the country against riots, it was not necessary. Mm-hmm. But it was necessary, it was simply necessary, I think, by way of terrorizing the people into a sober condition of mind, not to a sort of revengeful spirit. Mm-hmm. All the time I was feeling it. It's like this. Now, say this, what is called university riots. Mm-hmm. If you decide tomorrow to send away the whole lot down and pick up new men in the student body, I should think that's a very good thing. I believe in that sort of thing, that it's a drastic action. Maybe hard on the individual, but it is necessary for the sake of the community. That may be a peculiarity in my own experience.
Well, I like to leave the riots and go on to another subject. Question of agrarian matters, land policy.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1910 and early 20s, mm-hmm. that is before Brehm,
mm-hmm.
Was there a land policy?
No, none of it. Mm-hmm. Except that in the past, a few times were required. But no activity is needed to make use of it. Except in one instance,
but at the same time, wasn't there a desire to encourage the peasant smallholders?
You carried on as you were doing. They were, everybody was happy.
Didn't they want to sell land to the planters, develop planters?
Yes, at the beginning, mm-hmm. the whole idea was to open up the country. The only people who were open up these planters, of course, would come along, walked all the way from here with the packs, done it back, to now look at something like that, picked out a certain dam, and I decided that would do this. The government agent and the central government were only too pleased that there was anybody who was going to open that land.
Yes. But in some cases, especially in the lower-lying districts,
yes.
wasn't the growth of plantations at the expense of some of the village land?
That is a much more recent history mm-hmm. than the other. The other dates back from to 1840s.
Mm-hmm.
And this other thing began largely with the extension of the rubber plantations. And it was not any policy of government.
Mm-hmm.
It is the people did not attach the importance, that import of the land, to which they attach to it now. And the land itself was hardly ever any particular individual's. It was more or less family property. And a planter tells somebody, I want to buy some land. Then a local agent, a single man usually, goes down to some of these people, gets a deed from some of these co-owners. Then the others find that they are the remaining land is useless. Then they also write to me. Like that, the village land was.
So there were lots of private sales like that.
Oh yes.
But when it was for crown land, did the government, before selling the land, did they examine the land and see whether it was necessary for the village or not? Was it reported on by
the
village headman?
Generally, no. It was assumed that the villagers had enough land. And the land that was sold for exploitation by the Europeans was largely land which, in the condition that existed at that time, mm-hmm. the village people couldn't cultivate. It was land that remained in forest, and it will remain in forest.
But wasn't some of this forest land used for chainer?
Yes.
So wasn't it necessary in that sense?
Yes, that's true. That was ignored.
Mm-hmm. And wouldn't you say that in some areas, chainain was necessary for the subsistence of the village?
Yes. Particularly in the dry zone.
Now, for instance, in Ratnapura,
yes,
did the villagers suffer, because of the, in this way, because of the expansion of plantations?
If you mean that the area of land available for them to work in and to live was reduced, that is right.
Uh-huh.
But if you mean that the condition of the people worsened over the distance, that is not correct.
Why?
Because for the time being anyhow, their financial resources and their access to the good things of life became much more liberal than before.
How?
They
work on the plant?
They earn wages.
Mm-hmm.
It is true that Tamil labor, Indian labor was brought, especially for the tea estates, not so much for the rabble. But when there was land to be opened, it was always the opening of the land, laying out the roads, erecting the buildings, etc., was all things. Transport of all these things.
And part-time labor on rubber estates?
What?
And on rubber estates, part-time labor?
Yes, that's right. It is, if the population remains stationary, I think it would be a very good thing.
Yes.
But the population won't remain stationary.
And I suppose the villagers got a market for some of their produce too.
Yes, oh yes. The people don't understand that when a road is built,
mm-hmm,
it may be to take the rubber away, but villagers benefit. When the rubber is transported, the cart taking the rubber stop somewhere for their pure beetle, for their morning tea, prosperity there.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, the general activity which brought money and the necessity of life of the people became easier with these plantations. My own view is, if these plantations are now removed, they won't be doing anything with that land, most of them.
Mm-hmm. Were there a class of Ceylonese who specialized in buying up land and selling it to planters?
Oh yeah, they were always...
Did proctors specialize in it?
Mm-hmm.
Proctors and lawyers?
It's not too much that they... But these village people, to a certain extent, occasionally headmen, but... not me, it's lawyers and people.
Mudalali.
Yeah, Mudalali, yes. It's usually, yes, it's a Mudalali type man.
But sometimes didn't they buy up dubious claims? Or
when you buy up?
Dubious claims, like
yes,
the proper, get a deed from a legal married woman.
Yes.
And sell it to a planter.
Yes. Well, that's what has happened, there's no question about it. Because this Singhalese intermediary is a very shrewd sort of fellow, immortal. He had no moral sense of right and wrong. Somehow he accepted this land and made a little money.
Were there any politicians who could be classed as land grabbers too?
No, not more than grabbers.
No, but for instance, people like A.A. Vikramasinghe in K. Gaul and Medani Adiga, didn't they do this sort of thing?
The reputation of that Medani Adiga did.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Vikramasinghe, I can't speak.
What about the Vijayaratnas in Ratnapura?
I couldn't say.
Uh-huh. And there's a European, did you know Thornhill and Ruxton in Ratnapura? People call it Thornhill. Thornhill and Ruxton.
I can't remember the name, but I...
No, because I think they also had built up a reputation.
Yes.
I was wondering whether you had heard about this.
Yes.
You have.
But the European was, who wanted to invest money, was ready to buy up any title, he said.
Uh-huh.
mm-hmm. most Europeans. I mean, it was not regarded as anything wrong or remote or anything like that. Say, the village man comes along and says, shall I buy you land? Yes. How the land is bought and from whom and in what conditions, they are not concerned. They get the land, they pay the agreed upon price, mm-hmm. and they think they have done their duty.
In the 1920s, many of the leading politicians attacked the Wastelands Ordinance
yes.
and said that the British government were using this to grab land from the peasants and to sell it yes. to the planters.
That, I don't think that was ever a definite policy.
Mm-hmm.
It happened that the ownership title to land had to be sometime or other clarified. And the Wastelands Ordinance did that. Then the disposal of the land that came to the Crown under that arrangement, it's quite a different matter. That was not part of the policy in passing the Wasteland Ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
But when the land did come, anybody who was prepared to buy that land and develop it was given all the facilities. It did happen that except a few people in Parnaby and that sort of thing, the only people who were prepared to buy, develop the land was Europeans.
Mm-hmm. When they sold this sort of land, when the government sold this land,
yes.
before selling it, did they consider whether this land was needed for the village, perhaps?
No, that didn't come into the picture till very much later.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, till the new Ceylonese politicians took the matter up.
For instance, if some village gardens were being sold privately, say it was owned by an individual,
yes.
Or the Nindagama owners were selling some of their land, which
yes.
included tenants.
Yes.
If the GA or AGA heard of this, would he try and discourage
it? No, he wouldn't think it is business.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that he encouraged it or that. It was not his business.
Not his. It was sort of less affair.
Yes, private deal.
That is very, very interesting. I want to jump to a different sphere and the time when you were additional assistant colonial treasurer.
Yes.
You were working under Woods, were you?
Yes, yes.
I want to know what sort of man Woods was.
Very, very fine man.
Mm-hmm.
A thorough gentleman. He understood his work. And, you see, there was, other than taxation, there was not much of policy that touched the people. From the treasury,
mm-hmm.
it was merely collecting money, that sort of thing, and that he was quite good.
Bickmore was there?
Who?
Bickmore?
Yes.
What sort of chap was he?
What?
What sort of chap was he?
He was a, not human, a machine,
mm-hmm.
quite efficient, but more a machine than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Wholly unsuitable to be a government agent, for instance, in modern times.
Then I suppose he would have been more suited to this sort of work.
Yes, yes, that's right. Treasury, he was quite good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm interested in this spell of yours because this was the time when the new constitution had come.
Yes.
And there is a question of the relations between the officers of state
yes.
and the ministers.
Yes.
Have you any idea how Woods got on with the ministers?
Woods got on better than any other body. He tried to humor them,
mm-hmm.
To get around them. I remember, for instance, this merely in passing.
Yes.
He's coming to my room, sitting on the table, and seeing that he had to make a speech the next day about something, and asked me what I thought, whether it should be an aggressive speech in which he would condemn all these people and assert his point of view, or whether it should be conciliatory speech in which he just try to make friends with them. In that either he could do quite well, he said. I don't know if he could. And he asked me what I thought about it.
And what did he do in the end?
No, I forget. Now you only remember this, he's asking.
The point was that as financial secretary,
yes.
though he had no vote, mm. he could effectively stop certain measures, couldn't he?
In the councils, in legislative council and that sort of thing, but when he came to his office,
mm-hmm.
he was governed, as I said, by strict rules. There is no desire to thwart people.
But did he make it a point to clarify matters and to make sure, you know, to define the position of the finance secretary and to make sure so that in the future there won't be any encroachments?
Yes. There is a certain degree of antagonism, not only to him, but to all the three officers of state, as a nuisance. They are not people who ought to be there, our own may not be there, those three posts also. Resentment that there were three posts, big posts resented them.
Did this lead to some friction? No active conflicts,
but there was all...